The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
Hello and happy Monday to you. Welcome to Grace in Focus. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Now, I'm excited today because I'm reading the description sheet for our episode, and it has phrases like Moses, Pharaoh, Moses' staff, God's sovereignty, Pharaoh's hardened heart. Ooh, this is going to be exciting. It's because we're in a new series called The Ten Plagues of Egypt, and we're joined for this series by David Renfro, our resident Old Testament scholar. We're excited to hear what he has to teach us. Now, before we get to that, I want to remind you about our national conference, which is coming up very soon. You can find out all you need to know about our conference by going to faithalone.org, our website, and go up to the top and click on Events. And there you can even register, and we will look forward to seeing you there. Well, let's go right to today's discussion with Dr. Bob Wilkin, David Renfro, and Sean Lazar. Here's Grace in Focus.
Well, welcome back to Grace in Focus. My name is Sean, and I'm here with Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Sean.
And who do we have in the studio with us?
Well, we have the Right Reverend David Renfro.
All right, last time you introduced him as a doctor. Are you a Right Reverend, or is that made up too?
Well, he is. He is ordained.
I'm ordained, but I do not have a doctorate. I do have a THM from Dallas Theological Seminary.
Were you ordained at Schofield Bible Church?
Yes, I was.
Schofield Memorial Bible Church.
Gosh, really? Well, we're starting a new series with David. We introduced it in the last episode. We're going over the plagues of Egypt. Now, everyone is familiar with those plagues, if only from the movies, or maybe, I don't know, is it something that Sunday school, it seems like it's a story that's popular, you know, because it's a dramatic story. It has a lot of action in it. But most of all, it results in an amazing deliverance of Israel from, what is it, 400 years of Egyptian slavery?
Right. Plus, of course, the plagues are central to Judaism. Even in modern Jewish seders, when they have a Passover celebration, they're celebrating the Passover related to the 10th plague.
So in the last episode, you introduced us to this idea of the plagues, and one of the points you made was they're not haphazard. There is a structure to them. There's three sets.
Three groups of three.
Groups of three. They move from being slightly discomforting, kind of like getting lice, to destruction of the Egyptian society, to absolute fear and dread. And we suggested also that the plagues are, maybe they're connected to the gods of Egypt, maybe rebuking those, but I assume we're going to get into that. So before we get to the first plague, just summarize the events immediately preceding that provoked this response of God sending a plague.
Well, earlier in Exodus, Moses has been kind of confrontational with Pharaoh. And then in Exodus 7, earlier 7 in chapter 6, Moses starts to lose his confidence. And he says, you know, I really don't want to be your representative anymore. And he says, I'm of uncircumcised lips, meaning that whatever he says is unacceptable. In other words, he tries to opt out of being God's representative on earth.
Right.
And the Lord, I love what he does. He simply ignores all of Moses' objections and says, okay, here's what you do next. And finally, Moses goes ahead and agrees with it. But at that point, also, there's tremendous suffering among the Israelite people because they are in bondage. They are in forced labor camps,
right,
we would call them,
right,
to build the Egyptian infrastructure.
Now, it didn't start off that way. It started off with Joseph and his brothers moving to Egypt as a form of deliverance, right?
Correct.
Because there was a famine, but Egypt had the food, and God raised up Joseph to be, second in command over Egypt?
Exactly.
And then he saves his brothers. And it really starts off as a moment of deliverance.
Correct.
But then after Joseph died, what happened? The Egyptians kind of forgot, like, the blessings that had been brought from them, or what?
I get the idea that it's a gradual process, that they remembered, and each pharaoh that came after the one in which Joseph came into Egypt, each pharaoh was taught. Now, remember Joseph, that means you got to treat these Israelites a little better than some of the other conquered peoples.
Right.
But as time went on, we're talking 430 years.
Right.
That teaching kind of fizzles out toward the end. And in fact, in the early part of Exodus, it talks about a pharaoh that did not know Joseph.
Yeah.
So at the time that Moses was born, the pharaoh and that teaching and that status that Joseph had, which protected the Israelites from serious, horrible labor that was going on was disappearing.
But now one thing we need to also talk about, Moses was this miracle child that Pharaoh was having all of the male children killed, and his parents raise him for 3 months and then put him in this little ark, and he ends up taken up by Pharaoh's daughter.
Correct.
And he's raised by Pharaoh's daughter. So this was a man who was trained in all of the wisdom of Egypt, and he would have been well known by the Pharaoh.
Exactly. That Pharaoh. Yeah, he was raised, dressed as an Egyptian. He probably looked exactly like an Egyptian in a lot of ways.
Right.
But there was this little seed of Israelite still in him.
Right.
And that's caused him to murder an Egyptian soldier, remember, in the early part of Exodus. Then he had to go out of Egypt for 40 years. Right. Moses' life is in 40-year chunks. The first 40 years, he was Mr. Everything in Egypt.
Right.
Then he kills the soldier. He's essentially a murderer that's on the run.
Mm-hmm.
And for 40 years, he's with a bunch of smelly sheep out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Then he comes back and he delivers his people. And that's the other 40 years.
So
leading,
now he's
go through the Exodus.
80 years old at the time of the 10 plagues.
Correct.
And this could be a different Pharaoh from the Pharaoh when he was growing up, because otherwise this Pharaoh would be like 100 years old or whatever.
Most scholars, conservative scholars, think that the Exodus happened in 1446 B.C., and it was during the reign of a Pharaoh named Amenhotep II.
All right.
That's an important time thing, and it was probably the Pharaoh that Moses confronts, and the Pharaoh of the plagues, we'll put it that way.
Okay, very interesting. Are there any other options, or is that what you think?
Some other scholars I read up on said essentially 200 years later, 1290 BC or something like that.
And, yeah.
But most conservative scholars will say 1446 or thereabout for the Exodus to happen. So these plagues happened during 1446 or a year earlier, 1447 B.C.
Okay, interesting.
Thereabouts.
Now, you said that Moses would have, he grew up in the Pharaoh's household, he would have dressed like an Egyptian, he would have spoken like an Egyptian. Do you have any opinion about whether he would have danced like an Egyptian?
If he had any talent at all, probably so. But look at it this way, too. Moses, being part of the Egyptian royal court, was inundated, flooded, if you will, with paganism.
Right.
You know, all the dozens of Egyptian gods and goddesses that the Egyptians worshipped, he was probably close to being overwhelmed by that.
Sure.
And so one of the things that I learned from the plagues is not only are the plagues designed to show the Lord's superiority over all of the Egyptian gods and goddesses, you've got the Israelites who've been in there for 400 years, having learned paganism through their Egyptian captors. They need to learn something about the Lord.
Right.
But that's what I'm going to bring out in these plagues, is not only what did the Egyptians learn, you know, and how the Lord Yahweh was sovereign and all-powerful over these various Egyptian gods and goddesses, but
right.
also the Israelites needed to learn something about the nature and character of God.
Right.
And that means we need to learn more about the nature and character of God, and we can learn that from these plagues.
And so, even Moses and Aaron.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They're learning in this process, too.
Right.
And so, originally, Joseph won the favor of Pharaoh by essentially performing a miracle, right? Interpreting his dreams.
Right.
Which no one could actually telling him what the dream was. Was it telling him what the dream was and then interpreting it? So both of those things?
Pretty much.
Because anyone can try to interpret a dream. Like any one of us can just kind of make up something. But to tell them what the person dreamed, that's an amazing thing.
And then what it meant.
And
then it actually came about.
And interestingly, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, before the 10 plagues, God tries to persuade Pharaoh with another miracle. Right, he sends Moses with his staff, and he tells Moses to do something.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is kind of the prelude to the plagues, is that he's in Pharaoh's court. There's all these eyewitnesses there, so to speak. And essentially, Pharaoh says, show me what you got.
Yeah.
So Moses' staff, he throws it down, and it becomes a serpent.
Right.
So everybody, I'm sure, was wowed by that. And then, of course, Pharaoh's magicians, no big deal.
They were able to replicate.
Yes, they were.
Except Moses' serpent gobbles up the other serpents.
But what do you think is going on there?
Well, I think what the Lord is trying to do is show Pharaoh that he is sovereign over life. He can turn a dead stick into a live creature.
Without magic. Yeah.
You know, we can discuss, and there's actually some stuff here in the plagues, you know, like the magicians were able to reproduce the first two plagues.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's going on there?
How did they do that?
My opinion, just briefly, is I think the Lord allowed that to happen.
Is it like kind of like demonic powers?
Maybe,
through or something?
Maybe, but I just think
illusion, just trickery.
It could be a demonic thing, but see, remember, one of the overwhelming teachings of who the Lord is His absolute sovereignty.
Yeah.
So, in order for the magicians to do what they did, it's my opinion that the Lord had to allow it.
Is there any special symbolism about the serpent? Is there in the back of my mind, I have the idea that somehow it was related to Pharaoh as part of his garb, but right. I'm not sure about that.
Well, it was worshipped like practically everything else.
Right.
He was a god, and the ability to produce that and then have it turn back into a stick showed, once again, the Lord's absolute sovereignty over His creation.
Right. So in the 30 seconds we have left, in Exodus 7, verse 12, every man threw down his rod, and they became serpents, but Aaron's rod swallowed up their rods. Verse 13, and Pharaoh's heart grew hard.
Yeah.
And he did not heed them as the Lord had said. So unlike the Pharaoh in Joseph's time, who was wowed by Joseph's miracle and recognized that his God was the true God, this Pharaoh has the opposite reaction. His heart grows hard, and I think this is a theme we're going to see throughout the plagues.
Absolutely. The hardness of Pharaoh's heart, by the way, the word heart in Hebrew literally means to be heavy, kind of signifying that which is unresponsive and that kind of thing, and that's what's being shown here. I think that the Lord allowed the magicians to reproduce this miracle as a specific way to harden Pharaoh's heart.
All right, interesting. We'll continue this discussion in the next episode, where I think we'll actually get to cover the first plague, right?
Amen.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for being with us, David, and thank you for listening. We'll see you guys in the next show.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that great discussion. Did you miss an episode of Grace in Focus that you really wanted to hear? Just come to faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. And we have all our past episodes right there on the site. In addition to this, we have all kinds of other free resources available for you. It's all designed to help you mature and grow in your understanding of Scripture. So come visit us at faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. On this program, we keep our requests for financial partners to a minimum. But if you are interested in becoming a financial partner with Grace in Focus, you can find out how to do that also at faithalone.org. Our team is really great about answering questions, comments, and feedback. If you've got some, we hope to hear from you. Let me give you our email address so you can do just that. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. On tomorrow's program, we're going to talk about the first plague, water to blood. So join us for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep grace in focus.
The preceding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.